On this episode, I talked to Dean Harris of Fusion Projects. We discuss the process of renovating an office space, and we also dig deep into leadership. Hope you enjoy. This episode, we have Dean Harris from Fusion Projects. So you are VP of Business Development, correct?
Correct, yeah. Awesome. One of four partners and the VP of Business Development.
And you're also a principal?
Yep, correct.
Awesome. Thank you for coming. Appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks for having me down.
So what does Fusion do?
Man, that's a broad question. So we're in classic terms, a design, build, construction, project management firm. When you say what we do or where we do it, that's an answer that keeps evolving. I think we're involved in more sectors of business now than we've ever been. I think the market traditionally thought of us as a partner to help them solve office construction issues or challenges. We've branched out. We bought another company called Streamline that I'm sure we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. That got us a deep knowledge base in the industrial side of the marketplace. And we've seen through COVID and the downturn of office, which was our bread and butter for a number of years, a lot more technical industrial types of environments that we're helping solve from a planning perspective, but also with construction capability as well.
All right. So a client comes to you, right? Okay, we want to say Archivus, mm-hmm. right? In 2 years. Yeah. We come like, okay, we want a bigger space. And in the space, we want 3 studios. We want a second floor full of offices and maybe a meeting room. Now, do I find the property first and the building and call you? Or do I find the property with no building and you guys build right to the end?
So great question. So if I was going to put in 3 simple boxes, I would say we have capabilities and we work best with clients when we're involved in plan, design, and build. So plan generally is exactly what you're describing up front. We're not sure what we need. We're not sure where we need it. We're looking at some properties. I would say at this juncture, properties with buildings on them. Ground up is really the only vertical we're not heavily involved in. So if there's existing structure and you want to do viability, you want to assess whether it fits for you guys, you want to look at the building systems, the zoning, the code analysis, all of those things, that's the plan component that absolutely we will help with. And then, okay, the building's viable. We're going to make an offer. We're going to buy it. We're going to lease it. Depends how well you're doing in 2 years. Then we would say, okay, let's start designing. So we will look at design all the way from the stuff that as a user, the surface materials, the high touch areas, but also the systems. So we bring together the stakeholder team, which is generally consultants, engineers. We'll look at the building systems like air, plumbing, electrical. And then ultimately we create a product that we go out and we go to the market and we get competitive pricing to build. So it works best and has the most value when we do it from beginning to end. But that said, we are more bespoke than ever before. And if a client has already transacted a building and they said, we've made this investment, we need to figure out how to make it work for us, we can come in at that stage. Or if a client has done this before and just wants to make modifications to what they've got so they know roughly right what they need, we can do a lighter version of design and then help them construct it as well.
All right, so let's just say we find a place, but we haven't signed the lease.
Yep.
Right, and this is exactly what we want to do. Would you just come and take a look at the place? Hey guys, this is not going to work. You're not going to fit 3 studios in there and 2 floors of offices.
That would be a simple answer. Like if the mathematics of space don't fit, that's the easiest thing to ascertain. And we can do that really easily. Yes, absolutely. I would say that we would want to go a level deeper as well, depending on how much information you knew or didn't know. So you do the math and you're working with a designer, which could be your own designer. I mean, we have a portfolio of firms that we work with that we can bring to help decide that. If you're like, we've done the space plan in our existing, we know how much space we think we need. Will that work in the new facility? We'll come and we can do a report just based on that. The math works or it doesn't. Beyond that, though, you might say, okay, the math works, but then I'll go, Sunil, you were talking about studios and you don't have any of the systems that support that. It's not zoned to have that kind of use. So we can do an entire report that touches every potential impact to that space being viable or not.
What's the timeline usually, like from your experience, when it goes from, you know, we got the lot, we have the building,
yeah,
right? It's an open shell. Mm-hmm. From the time we signed the contract to you guys handing over the keys and we're ready to move in. What's the timeline?
Oh man, that's so highly variable. And I'll tell you what the biggest variable is.
So let's go say 10,000 square feet, not big.
Yeah, but the variables are less around size than what the existing state is versus the future state, right? So if it was something that previously was a warehouse that a food company was using for distribution and you want to turn into a studio, okay, now we got to go to the city and find out if they'll let us change use potentially, because now you're gonna have an assembly space or a studio space. And the city's always a variable that they give us fairly regular updates of how long that will take, but it's in the wind. So if you're having a change of use involved, you could be 6 months to a year just to get the change of use before we would start designing for you. Now, if you're going into a space that was a studio before, but it was for Disney and that doesn't work for you and you want it to be something different, so all we're doing is a construction permitting process, then the biggest variables are how quickly you can make decisions. Mm-hmm. So how quickly can we bring that design set of drawings together? Say a month, 2 months. Then we go into the city for permit, which depending on the city is currently anywhere from 2 months to 8 months, depending on which municipality we're in. And then the construction process is gonna be the same pretty much anywhere. So during the permit process is when we'll go to the market and we'll get competitive pricing and all the scopes of work for you. We'll do the final design selection. We'll make sure it's gonna be exactly what you want. But the two big variables are how quickly can you get into permit? That means all the decisions you're making as the client up front, and then how long that permit process is depending on which municipality you're at.
Is that taking a long time right now, the city?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, right now there's certain municipalities that are pretty good. They're in their return from COVID mode as well. I would say 12 months ago, we started to see a significant impact to the city sending their people home. They weren't ready for COVID. I mean, nobody was to some degree, right? But if you think about organizations that were more mobile than others, anything in civil infrastructure wasn't very mobile. I think, first of all, they struggled with technology. So if we send our workers home, oh, they don't have laptops. Well, that's a problem. Okay, we'll get them laptops. So a percentage of the population could go home and work. Oh, they're not behind a secure firewall. Okay, so now they can't access city records or do drawings. So it literally ground the process to a halt. And I would say we saw what was traditionally 6, 8, 10 week process go out to 6 months plus.
Wow.
Yeah. And wow. So think about it as a landlord who's done transactions, who tells a client, yeah, you know, permitting a couple months and then your fixturing period will start 2 months later, that now no one can get in and do work for 6 to 8 months. Client says, I'm not going to pay rent on a space that I can't even begin to improve. Landlord's saying, well, the last guy's already moved out, so it's sitting vacant for me. So as you can imagine, there was a lot of frustration in the system.
That has changed now?
Changing.
It
definitely has not changed. I mean, I will keep this municipality nameless so they don't get angry at me, but I mean, we were getting, as recently as the summer, being told, for a complex project, for like a life sciences type of facility, 10 months for the permitting process, just for review.
No approval, just review.
The client actually, based on that, decided to move to a different municipality where the times they were getting guidance on was about half that. So like cities are losing tax base based on slowness of process.
It's crazy. Yeah. That is crazy.
Yeah, we're seeing it's gonna have, I bet, COVID slowdown aside, the permitting process across municipalities will be the largest single impact to workflow for the last half of this year.
So if we get the full swing, that's going to be even backed up because we got so many other projects in line as well.
Yeah. And I mean, and it's not just us. There's one permitting department at every municipality. If you're building a home, or you're building residential, you're doing office improvement, you're doing a rezone for a building, it all goes through the same shop. So there's definitely going to be pent up demand.
So Dean, what do you do there at Fusion? What's your role?
Firefighter. No, it's a little bit of everything. So ultimately, business development is in the title. So it's my team's initiative to go out and make sure that we fill our funnel and we have enough opportunities coming down to keep the lights on and keep everybody employed. Now, how that happens, we were talking a little bit earlier, there's a number of different channels that we do to achieve that. We spend a lot of time with commercial real estate, trying to find out who's in the market, who's transacting, who's going to need a new space. We're making a decided push at getting better at going business to business through stuff like social media, web presence, all of those things, because people shop differently now than they used to. There used to be a fairly logical pecking order that a business realizes that they have a business problem. Usually it's that they're expanding or contracting. They say, I need more or less space, I'm not sure. So one of the two next phone calls they would make would be to a design firm or a real estate firm to get some counsel. We like to throw ourselves in the mix with both those groups that we can help facilitate kind of some understanding of what that problem or challenge is. And then hopefully spend enough time with the client so that we earn their trust and tell them about our kind of end-to-end methodology and our ability to get them price comparative or price competitiveness, that they see us as a partner early in the process. So when you say, what do? I oversee business development, but I like to think of us now more as a solutions provider. So really, I don't know, I hate the term consultant, but I call myself a workplace consultant. I would call myself as a market resource for real estate, landlords, clients, because we want to help them try and solve space problems. So if I'm the tip of that spear, so be it. But really it's around helping us innovate to be able to solve problems for clients.
Got it. And you're mostly in the Vancouver market, in the Lower Mainland market, or?
Largely in the Lower Mainland. I mean, historically it's been kind of like Hope to Whistler.
Okay.
We're starting to get involved in projects outside of the Lower Mainland. We're doing a couple up in Terrace for one of the First Nations up there, the Nisga Nation, who are building a senior center and cultural center and a couple of different buildings up there that we're helping to project manage. So we're definitely expanding our reach into different areas.
That might be hard doing stuff up there with, you know, and not knowing the trades. Or do you guys have trades up there?
No, we don't. What we're doing is working with the nation. And actually, it's part of a training and development program that's going on up there to help them become better and more self-sufficient, to teach the youth kind of a skilled trade. And we're working with some training groups that they've engaged to actually be able to execute the labor. So the sub-trades will all be local. And we're going to project manage and oversee that.
Got it. So I've born and raised in Vancouver. I saw buildings in, you know, Vancouver. It was very small, and now, you know, you got towers everywhere. I always see Fusion's name.
Like, good.
Buildings up.
Good. Thank you.
Project is getting designed by Fusion, built by Fusion. Are you more in the industrial side? Because I see a lot of this stuff happening in the downtown core, mm-hmm. which is office buildings.
Yeah.
Outside of downtown, what do you guys do in the suburbs? Do you guys touch anything out there?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I would say 2.5 years ago, I would have given you a different answer.
Yeah.
And it would have been largely downtown office core focused, because that's kind of the core of our business over the last 13 years. Now, in the last 2 years, to bring us up to 15, when we made the purchase of Streamline, we are a lot more involved in things outside, so in the suburbs that are larger industrial. There's an office component to that, but it's not going out there to do the office. We're not going out there just to do the front end of a warehouse. We're going out there to talk to those types of clients about solving their facilities needs, whether it has office or not. So outside of the core, it's a lot more industrial, whether that's distribution, food production, life sciences, all kinds of new things that we've been taking on in the last couple of years.
What do you like more? Designing building offices or designing building like warehouses and food chain and like?
They're different for sure. I find it more, because I've always been in the office space, I find it more interesting to understand the unique challenges of industrial, especially if it has a technical nature. Not if it's just racks, warehouse in and out, but if they're making things, they have a process, kind of learning and working
like a Tesla plant.
Yeah, like anything. Like we did Spud.ca's food distribution center. Like they're the Walmart grocery distribution.
On Hastings?
Right? So that's like the retail location. We did their actual distribution center as well.
Okay.
And when you look at like the conveyors and the cooling and the distribution, you're like, that's a complex system. So like I'm a systems-based thinker by nature. So getting kind of your head wrapped around how other clients' businesses work and the systems they employ, and then physically how to manifest that in space, I think that's cool.
The coolest thing is just like kind of seeing an empty shell. If I'm looking at a residential real estate, which I've built and renovated many times, and you look at this ground, and then 7, 8, 9, 10 months later, you get this house, and just the feeling when it's all done, you get the same feeling when you're planning to like handing the keys over and, you know, conveying belt and,
you know, it's funny.
Freezers all set up.
You know what the word of it is? It's funny. Like you're right. There's this thing. And I was thinking about that the other day. It's legacy. It's kind of like you created something, right? Like you're like, I know it's not.
It is a legacy.
You're part of it.
I get it.
And it's the client's space and it's theirs to do with what they want. But you're like, that's our space.
We built it. Yeah, that's my baby right there.
Yeah. And it's kind of cool. Like there's very few industries I find where you're a creator of things that are going to be there probably after you're gone, right? And when you do a good job and the client's happy about it as well, and of course you make a buck, that's pretty cool.
Drake brought this up. I was reading an article where he wanted to build his house in Toronto, that massive house.
Yeah.
He's like, I want to build this when I, like, it's around 200 years from now. When I'm gone, like, I put this up and it became a structure there, like, almost like a heritage property in 200 years from now, right?
Sure.
Like, I get it. It's like this building here, like, it's not the great, it doesn't look the greatest from outside, but it's quite nice.
Yeah, it's right? funny.
It's got character when you start looking at it.
And there's people who are like, if you're mechanically inclined, like, you're the guy very hands-on. Our president, Brian, is building two homes right now. Like, he's building the home he's in, he's building the home he's going to. And like, he finds joy in being involved in that process. I would love to get involved in that process, and all it would involve is me like losing digits off my hands and the project never going anywhere. But being involved in the ideation of that, not necessarily the swinging of the hammer, I love that component of it. And still, you go by and you still have that same pride, and yeah, we took part in that.
It's the process there. It's like athletes, builders are the same thing. I look at it the same class, because you're always working, your muscles are working, and you're getting from one step to another, and you can physically see it happening. Yeah. So I get to see that in the construction. I get to see that in sports as well. I really don't get to see that too much in business.
Well, I mean, we're in a very thought-based economy now, right? So intellectual property is the largest output that anything does. And it's funny, that's interesting you mentioned that, because the transition over the last, I don't know, 20 years, call it, from the industrial economy of, and it was a factory-based economy. Like, the reason that office towers exist is basically a vertical factory for people and process. And things would go from one desk to the next, and you were part of basically a chain. And now that chain all happens through a keyboard, and you never necessarily see the finished product.
There's a chain. It's called blockchain now.
Well, yeah, there's blockchain. That's a whole different kind of code, right? Yeah. Nobody can see that unless you can read the matrix. But it's interesting that you're right, that at the end of the day, unless you were, I guess, maybe the creatives now, and it's come full circle in tech, that if you're making a game or you're creating visual effects, and so the code that you created led to a visual representation of what you do, great. But if you're in a lot of professional services and you're process-based in your role, you don't know what greater content you are a contributor to. It's hard to see. Like, I think you're right. It's a physical manifestation of your progress.
It's the feel good.
Yeah.
Right? You're tired at the end of the day. You go home like, oh, damn, I got the wall up.
Yeah, but you know what the other beauty of it is there's a feedback mechanism that's the client. So they're the user of what you've built. And when they're as happy about it as you are, that's an awesome feedback mechanism to have.
Exactly. So what's Fusion doing to grow? Are you guys, I know you guys acquired a company. Is it more acquisitions now, or is it more like, you know, starting a different division and organically growing that?
So a little bit of both. Okay. So the company that we acquired gave us an immediate knowledge and skill set around that industrial marketplace. I would say that has led to us to have an immediate want to grow our professional services capabilities. And that's the planning and creative component of design, as well as it's not just in planning, it's in assessment, it's upstream things. So we've recently hired another designer who has a ton of depth and strength in visualization. She does like augmented reality drawings. Nice. and those kinds of things. And immediately the product quality that we can create to help clients visualize an environment is gone up like 1,000-fold. We hired a young gentleman who is an electrical engineer by trade, who wants to be on the sales team eventually. So is going to learn through project management that brings a depth of knowledge from a systems perspective that he can bring to his projects that he's impacting. We've got in-house capabilities around architecture now that we didn't used to have. And so we're looking to continue with a little bit of that, but also I would say we have a strong push towards strategic partnership. So being, a Swiss Army knife, you know, the jack of all trades, master of none, is easy to fall victim to. So I would say that we're going to pick two or three core competencies around being able to continue with office, industrial, professional services. But then outside of that, it's really about the skill of bringing together the right partner group. So whether it's engineering specialists, mechanical, electrical, unique building, shell conditions, we're going to work with strategic partners and have their depth of knowledge complement our team. So really, I would say, one of the best ways to grow for us is through being a good integrator and bringing together the right stakeholders so that you can execute a project with excellence and doesn't have to be all under your roof. If I use design as an analogy, we have a little bit of design capability in-house, but it's not because we want to design every project we work on. That can lead to consistency in a negative fashion. So if I'm working with you to design your studio, and then tomorrow I'm working with a law firm to design their firm, and the next day I'm working with a gaming company to do a studio, those are all three very different products. And if I only have the same designer's mind, it's really easy for them to start to cut and paste stuff that aren't relevant to that individual.
Yep.
And it's not it's not to speak down to that designer in particular. It's just a matter of when you get busy, you tend to pull on what you've already done, and it becomes a cut-paste level of beigeness.
Everyone has their niche.
I would rather bring together the best designer, the best consultants who fit with that client from a personality and communication perspective, as well as from an output desire perspective, to give the best possible outcome in a bespoke way every time, as opposed to trying to systematize the design process.
To go deeper on that, are those firms in Canada, or are they in Vancouver, or is that outsourced from different countries?
Vancouver, for sure. Right now, and there's reasons on the design and architecture side, because like in British Columbia, you need to have a local architect of note. So while we work with some firms that have an office in Vancouver that have global presence, some of the bigger design shops are not only national but international that we've worked with. They can bring that design intelligence from all around the world. But it really works best when you're working with people who are in the same time zone, who can go to a site meeting with a day's notice, who understand the local code and regulation requirements. It expedites the process.
No, for sure, 100%. So these companies you guys are acquiring, would that be standalone, or is that going to be a part of the Fusion team?
So right now, all the stuff I mentioned around kind of design and the focus on assessment is all in-house. Design oversight, sorry, is in-house. The independent firms that we work with will remain independent, and we will continue to vet what that group of professionals looks like.
The ones that you acquire.
So we're probably not going to acquire further design partners.
Okay.
So we call them strategic partnerships, but they will act as standalones for sure. Yeah, there's having that all under one roof, I think would be distraction for us, whereas if we can have a nice symbiotic relationship with a strategic partner, we'd rather them do what they do and continue to work with others as well.
Other than contracting out?
Yeah, effectively. I mean, it's funny. There's a lot of business models who would pick a strategic partnership, say a design firm, and then they would farm all of their business to them, maybe with a long-term play of trying to acquire that firm, because what they do right before they go to acquire them is they pull all the business away. That firm has nothing to do, and then they're a cheap acquisition target. I've seen it in the print business. I've seen it in the design business. It happens again and again. But we want healthy partners who are working on a diverse range of things. And when the fit is good, we use them. When they have capacity, we use them. But we want to keep a diverse range of design partners that we work with throughout the market.
Got it. Let's go deep into the process here. So phone call comes, you pitch, they say, yes, let's go ahead. Mm-hmm. Till the time you hand the keys over, whatever, yep. 18 months, 12 months, whatever it is. What's the process like?
So it depends who you are.
Okay.
But I would say in a poster child kind of way, a client, just like you mentioned earlier, comes in and says, hey, Fusion, we have a space problem, or we have a business problem.
Archivist. Yeah. Let's go Archivist. Three studios,
yeah,
and two levels of office space.
Right. So we say, okay, where are you at? Do you have a space in mind? No, we're going to market. So we have a 9-step process or 9-phase process. The first two phases really are around assessment and viability. So we're going to help you, whether it's with that space plan that we talked about, or whether it's doing a full building report that's 50 pages and touches every single system in the building. We're going to help you get enough information to make a really good decision on real estate. Once you've secured that, then we would move into a design process with you. Starts with a space plan, very simple. At that point, we can start to do kind of some very high level price awareness for you, so that you're going, okay, yeah, that's about what we thought it was going to cost, because we got to go to a funder and guess what, borrow some money to build this place out. So we would do that early in the process and then say, okay, that's just a fit, a test plan. Now we're going to need some consultants to come in to design the lighting, the electrical, the plumbing, the airflow. So we would hire those consultants. Now we're getting into schematic design phase. So
that's step three now?
That's step three. Okay. Would be schematic stage design. Three. We bring them under our umbrella. So that we can, as quickly as possible, in a condensed way, get you in for a permit with the city of whatever that you're in for.
So let's say that's considered pre-construction.
That would all be pre-construction.
So pre-construction, this is before we even go to the government or to the city, whatever it is. How long is that process? Say we're fast.
If you're fast and you've decided on a real estate process and the amount of square footage you would need, it's 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay.
I would guess.
All right.
Yeah, so nothing crazy.
The next phase now, phase
four. Yeah, the next phase. Well, as we go in for permit, we're also going to begin design development. So we're starting to pick finishes. We're understanding more about the depth of the design. Because while the permit's in and waiting for the city to respond, we want to have everything ready, including a full tender set of drawings, so that we have a construction solution by the time we get the permit ready to go. So part of that is we run a tender. So we have to have tender drawings so we can go to all the sub-trades and say to the sub-trades, hey, each trade, how much does it cost to do this scope of work? We do it competitively on your behalf, open book process. So you go, hey, Dean, how do I know that those guys are the best solution? We go, well, we got three prices for this scope of work. Company A said it was 100 grand, company B said it was 75, and company C said it was 85. And you say, well, do we pick the cheapest? And we say, it depends. They are all reliable. They all have good labor. We've never had a bad experience with any of them. Yeah, pick the cheapest. If you go, well, these guys seem too cheap. We think they missed some scopes of work. Probably some risk in going with them. Do you want us to ask for a pricing clarification, or should we just go with the next cheapest one? Oh, let's just go with the next cheapest one. Sounds like a headache. So we go through that entire process with you in a collaborative way. And at the same time, Sunil's going, I'm getting nervous. This budget's creeping up towards $1 million. I've only got like 800,000. So, okay, well, let's do some value engineering. So all of this is going on while we're waiting for the permit to happen. Hopefully, before the permit comes, we've locked down a drawing, and then we would finalize what's called an issue for construction set of drawings. So now we're kind of blending together phase 4 to 7, all through design, clarification, permit, tender. And now we've got a tender set, we've got a construction set of drawings. The city calls up, says your permit's ready, come pick it up. We mobilize on site, and then we go into phase 8 and 9, which is the construction process. Construction and then finalization. So post-construction is dealing with any small deficiencies, making sure you have all your paperwork, getting the warranty in place, giving you the keys, cutting the ribbon, and popping champagne. So 9 easy steps.
It's funny, the hard, like, people don't look at it, they think the pre-construction is the easy part, right? It shouldn't take that long, but it's the 8 and 9 which probably is the actual work.
But from a amount of sweat, it's phase 8 and 9 for construction, yeah. For the guys in the field especially, but honestly, the most valuable time is the first three phases.
The first two, yeah.
Because if you try and shortcut that, or don't invest in the process, or say, yeah, forget it, we're gonna skip some steps. I heard one the other day, I can't remember who the author was, but it's easier to erase mistakes on a plan than it is on a job site.
Yes.
Because one involves a pencil and one involves a hammer. So spending the time to get it right, in our world, avoids things that some systems count on. In traditional construction, and you said you've done homes, it's very often the case that after you've done a home renovation, you and your general contractor are no longer best friends, if you were in the first place. Because the general contractor's job becomes, it seems, and I've done one or two myself, to disappoint you through misses of schedule, cost overruns, change requests, oops, we didn't have that in our quote. When you're working on a business-to-business basis, those are not fun conversations.
Yep.
So we always coach our clients, spend the time up front in a collaborative process. You'll spend money to do it, but it's the best money you can spend on a project up front. Whether it's before you decide on a real estate transaction, there's that investment that you'll make, or it's in the design process to make sure you've got everything covered. Because our ultimate objective would be to do a zero change order job for you. As long as you don't change your mind, as long as there's nothing behind the walls that we didn't know about, and as long as the city doesn't throw a curveball at us, we would like to not have to do any changes throughout a project. And then you're going, this is weird. You're on schedule and you're on the exact budget. That's the goal. There are other construction processes that aren't design build based, where the construction component is counting on the errors of the design component, and the designer only cared about the design. And where it goes from there, it's dissociated. So it can become acrimonious. And general contractors, I mean, you go to any building conference and there's a meme. There's a picture of a yacht pulling a dinghy, and the dinghy says construction contract and the yacht says change orders, that's a thing for a reason. But we don't think that's a good way to build lifelong clients.
Yeah.
So we'd rather coach you towards making investments up front to save you cost, headache, and process on the back.
Makes sense. Leadership.
Hmm.
How do you, what's the word I'm looking for here? How do you motivate your team?
It's hard to answer in a team-based way. I always, motivation.
Individual.
I was going to say, I don't want to paint it with one brush, yeah. Right? I think understanding the priorities of individuals and then helping to motivate, mentor, support them towards achieving whatever it is that gets them out of the bed in the morning is my approach to leadership. At Fusion in general, I'll tell you, with all of us, the whole leadership, executive leadership team especially, we've made a really big investment, and everyone in the company has to have a 3-year development plan. And it's really around their self-improvement, right? Their career path. And me as a leader, my objective is to help people achieve and exceed their 3-year development plan in less than 3 years. I want and I find success by helping those around me get to where they want to go. There is old school leaders who have fear of success of those under them. I am a firm believer that the best leaders surround themselves with people who are smarter and better than them and get out of the way. And my job is just to get roadblocks out of their way. So hire great people, find out what they want to do, find out what they're good at, and then remove obstacles from them. That's a leadership win for me.
Even though they want to be a journalist for New York Times, you guys have a 3-year plan for that?
Yeah. You know, you'd be surprised the number of former Fusionites that have spun out of our organization. And when they leave, it's hugs and handshakes, because part of their 3-year development plan, they realized, was to do their own gig.
Yeah.
And we gave them the capability, the depth of knowledge and everything to do that. And that's, we can never feel bad about that, because that's what we're there for.
Yeah.
We're there to,
that's
like,
the legacy.
Empower people.
That's the legacy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Human legacy at the end. How do you guys do this? Is it more having people come in to chat with them, giving them the right tools to go that way?
So it's funny. I mean, we're back in talent acquisition mode now. And Brian and Nick, like two of my partners, and Blair, who's the fourth partner, Brian and I are very involved in the kind of the people acquisition side of things.
Yep.
And we don't use headhunters. Sorry, HR personnel firms, if you hear this. It really comes down to, we have found our greatest success through, it's not the right term, but like the friends and family route, that someone who works for us knows someone who's in the same field who they think would love our culture, and we'll bring them in. And it always starts with whiteboard for us where you are in your life and where you want to go. And when they've, whether it's a fiscal objective that they outline, or they want to buy their first house and they need this many dollars to do so, or they want to learn this next thing in their career. When you visually make someone put that down on a whiteboard, and then you show them the path of how they can achieve that in your organization, that's how we get great people to come in. And literally, Brian and I call it the whiteboard. And we're going to bring them in and whiteboard them. And it's not like a sales trick. It's them coming in and telling us what they want to do, and then us showing them how that fit works. It's funny. I call it the trap, but Nick, the founder of our company, I've known for like 15 years since he started Fusion, basically. And annually we go for pints a couple times a year. And the last 5 years or so, he's like, you got to come work with me and blah, blah. I'm like, Nick, I work for like a major $1 billion manufacturer. Like, make this make sense. And Nick's really like a blue sky thinker, and he's an ideas guy, and he's an innovator and an entrepreneur. I'd be like, Nick, it's got to be a thing. Don't talk to me about a concept of work. Talk to me about like a role, an opportunity. And so we did this dance a number of times, and like 3 years ago, or probably almost 3.5-4 years ago now, we were out at Christmas having our pint, and he goes, okay, I think I got something. I'm like, okay, tell me, what is it? And he goes, okay, it's a VP role of like business development or whatever. We'll put the right title on it. And he goes, you just got to talk to Brian. And it was, I think, probably one of Brian's earlier kind of whiteboard conversations, but he didn't have to have me whiteboard it, because I've been doing what I've been doing for so long. I came in and I go, hey, Brian, this is what I need. And I basically did a whiteboard for him, but I laid it out and I go, you know, I got a burn rate. I got daughters that have shopping habits and all these things. So there's always a fiscal side of it.
Yeah.
I go, but here's all the stuff I don't want to do anymore that I've done in my career. I want to get off the road. I don't want to feel like a hamster on a wheel. I want to work with a leadership group that I'm part of that I can make a difference with. I want to help grow a business. And he goes, okay. And a week later, we got together at a meeting, and it was kind of going to be like, I'm going to give him a couple of numerical figures that I think will scare him off. And he's going to give me a bunch of like job functions that he thinks I'll love. And we sat down and we put the two sheets together, and Brian's like, yeah, we can do that. We can do that. We'll figure this one out. We can do that. Yeah, this one's good. He goes, okay, so like, are we good to go? And I'm like, shit. and I went home and I told my wife, and I'm like, there's like, I gave him the thing and he said he can do all of it. I'm like, I got to go. She's like, yeah, you got to go. And that was like almost 3 years ago now. So
nice.
It was the exact same exercise, just done a different way for us. Yep. But it's how it works. And I was at my old company for 13 years, and I missed people, but I haven't looked back once. I have no doubt it was the right decision.
You know, you made the right decision then.
Yeah. and then I become a partner in the company 6 months ahead of COVID. Perfect timing. But c'est la vie. It's still, I mean, we've all done an MBA in leadership in the last 18 months of how do you keep a small, medium business enterprise afloat? How do you keep people engaged? You're a counselor, you're a business leader, you're in the business, you're on the business. It's been a crazy time, but you know, it's been a time machine. COVID mm-hmm. has helped us just accelerate 5 years for things we probably would have been too lazy to do.
100%.
That we've been forced to do.
Yeah.
So it's been a curse and a gift all at the same time.
A lot of people complain about it. It's good when you kind of sit back and see how people grown out of it. Because most, they just kind of sit there like, okay, COVID hit, let's do nothing. And the business goes down. Rather than, this is the time to adjust. This is the time where, you know what? You didn't have laptops. Pick up the laptops. There was no service. Go get the servers. Figure this out.
Yeah, but you know, Sunil, what you're describing is a mindset, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there are individuals who said, you know what? The world's against us. We're going to go home and just wait for it to implode. And there's innovators who said, yeah, this is our time to pivot.
Yeah.
Like, whether it's a substantial pivot in your business, or is it just you're going to do a bunch of stuff that you probably should have been doing anyways, but didn't have the time, the capacity, the will to do, that now you're being forced to do to stay viable. But are you going to stay on those when times recover to what they were? I mean, it's funny, my team, halfway into COVID, we'll say like after the first year of it, we had kind of a sales meeting. And at that time, there was like six of us on the BD side. And I went around the room, and it was kind of a loaded exercise. I'm like, guys, so let's imagine COVID's over in 6 months. What are you gonna be doing? They're like, oh, we're gonna be the same things we were doing like 12 months ago. I'm like, wrong answer, right? And that was a mindset that they just assumed what got us here was what was gonna take us forward. And it was just a lack of foresight that was a blind spot. And I think we've had blind spots, and COVID's exposed blind spots in every organization. And now there's three of us on the business development side. We're all partners. We're more aligned as a BD and partnership team than we've ever been before. And we're doing new stuff that keeps everybody excited. So see where it goes from here.
No, it's good to hear that.
Yeah.
Nice way to end it. Thanks, Dean. Appreciate your time.
Hey, no problem.
That was freaking awesome, man. That was really good.